You know, 10 months ago, we made a decision to redefine our direction. We knew there would be ups and downs this season. We knew that we would encounter some things that were going to be difficult, and we did. With that said, I think we're in a better place today than we were at this time last year. And I think we have an opportunity to grow as an organization starting today.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA.
Levine, he goes right. Oh!
Stop it, Sampson! Did you not get the memo?
Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA.
Here's Enes Kanter, what are you doing? The finisher in New York City.
Your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
We're going to preach patience. Doesn't mean we're not going to be looking for ways to get better, but a lot of it's going to come internally. We need Zach LaVine to be a better basketball player. Chris Dunn to come back a better player. Lauri Markkanen, Bobby Portis, you go down the line. They have to put in the time, and confident that they will.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day.
Like I said at the beginning, I feel better today about our direction and our position than I did a year ago.
Locked On Bulls. Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and college hoops over at SB Nation. Along with me is Matt Peck, writer of Bulls basketball in the NBA at LockedOnBulls.com and host of the 312 show on AM 1590 WCGO in Chicago. Follow us on social media on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure to follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Hit us up. Text and voicemail line 331-979-1369. All of your questions, all of your text messages, all of your voicemails, send it to us there. We'll be playing all of those on Wednesday. Today's episode, we're taking some of those left by the side questions that we didn't get to on Wednesday's episode. We get a bunch of text messages all the time, every single day, as well as voicemails. So we want to get to as many as we can. So we're going to try to clean that up a little bit, answer some of the questions that we didn't get to on Wednesday, and use this as kind of a short, extended period of mailbag. But first, what's going on, Matt? Are you excited for the weekend? I know you said you weren't going to Lollapalooza. Hopefully you're not feeling crazy after just one day of Lolla.
No, because I've shunned myself away from it. hopefully everybody that went down to Grand Park last night had a great time and enjoyed whoever the hell it is the kids are listening to these days. I couldn't tell you. But the remainder of my weekend will consist of drinking beers on my deck on the north side, way far away from all of that madness.
I saw, though, that I got to give you credit. I saw that you were enjoying Chance the Rapper's new songs that he put out.
I am. I'm finally starting to get into Chance, and I know I'm like 3 years late on that, even though the guy's only, what, like 22 or 23 years old. I do like Chance's stuff. It took me a while to sit down and listen to it. I'm an old soul when it comes to music. I like the oldies. I like a lot of, like, you know, heavy metal from the 80s and early 90s. That's my jam. And that and musical theater. I'll listen to show tunes all day, man. But most of the new stuff that's on pop radio, the hip hop radio the kids are listening to, I don't have time for it. But Chance, when he put out those four new songs, I was like, okay, yeah, no, this guy's awesome.
See, I grew up in college on Chance the Rapper. Like, Acid Rap dropped when I was in college, and that was like still one of the first few.
Feels so freaking old right now.
That was one of the first few albums that I can go to. I will mixtapes that I can go to and say, damn, that like really captured me as like a hip hop fan. And now, like, people like me who grew up on 10 Day and Acid Rap, the first two mixtapes of Chance the Rapper, kind of look at Coloring Book and the new songs that he did release and some of the other stuff he was doing with the Social Experiment Band and go, I'd rather have old Chance back. But he's done great things. And his new songs right now, I think, are going and mixing in between what he did with Coloring Book.
I might need security. Awesome.
Oh, fantastic
love
song.
It. 65th and Ingleside. Love it.
I Might Need Security is literally the ballsy way of being able to overlay a beat with Fuck You.
Dude. Oh, especially putting Rahm Emanuel on his hit list in that track. So good.
So shout out to Chance the Rapper. We use his beats all the time. Obviously, if you didn't know before, our sticking point as far as the beat going on in our intro is actually from No Problems. Shout out to everybody that likes the beats on this show as well. So I try to keep it in tune, try to keep it for what the young people are liking. And shout out to everybody that's able to pick out those beats, that because I like to mix them up too throughout the show. But that's not what you came here to talk about. We did not come here to talk about music. Shout out to everybody at Lollapalooza, though. So we want to get to some of these mailbag questions, and I want to do that right now. You can interact with us, join the show, join the conversation, text messages and voicemails, 331-979-1369. All right, Matt, let's get to a couple questions here. So the first one says, I don't have a specific question, but if you guys could cover the lineups Hoiberg might use to get the most out of everyone, particularly Jabari Parker, Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr., I would much appreciate that. Okay, so Matt, even though, like, right now, we both of us, I think, are in agreement that Jabari Parker playing the three is probably not going to work out. We hope it does, but it's probably not going to work out. So how do you get the best out of these three guys in particular, Jabari Parker, Lauri Markkanen, and Wendell Carter Jr.? What do you think Fred Hoiberg has to do in order to get the best out of all three of those guys?
Do you think Fred Hoiberg knows the answer to that question?
I was just going to say.
I sure as hell don't. I mean, obviously the big thing here is figuring out when to play Jabari at the three and when you can shift him to the four, depending on who's playing center. And if the Bulls are going big or if they're going small. It seems like if there's one thing we know concretely, and not concretely, but it's a pretty safe assumption to make right now, unless something crazy happens in the next month and a half, the starting lineup is going to be Chris Dunn at the one, LaVine at the two, Parker at the three, Markkanen at the four, and Rolo at five. That's going to be the starting lineup opening night, unless something crazy happens and somebody punches somebody or whatever. Shout out, Bobby. But other than that, where they go from there, where Fred Hoiberg goes from there as far as figuring out the best ways to play Parker and Markkanen and Wendell together on the floor in that front court, good luck, man. I don't know. I'm hoping at some point Wendell takes over for Robin Lopez in the starting lineup, and I wrote about that yesterday. You can get that on LockedOnBulls.com as well. But like, I want to see Markkanen and Wendell play together at the four and the five. I really want to see that. As for how Jabari fits into that playing the three, again, you've heard it before. I have my doubts about that. So the small ball lineups that Fred can tinker with would probably include shifting LaVine to the three and Parker to the four, and then either, we've talked about this too, flirting with giving Markkanen some minutes at the five, and then either having LaVine at the three, Parker at the four, and Markkanen at the five, or LaVine at the three, Parker at the four, and Wendell at the five. I think we're going to see both of those looks this upcoming season, and we'll probably also see some of those with Bobby Portis inserted at the four and the five as well.
Yeah, I would agree too, and I think I'm starting to make, and maybe I'm just an idiot, and maybe because the NBA has been gone already for a few months now, and I'm just talking myself into things, but the more and more I sit here and think about this, especially early on if Robin Lopez is the starter at center, I feel like Wendell Carter Jr. can absolutely eat in that second unit. You think about backup centers that are going to be able, or backup front court players that you think he's going to be going up against. And between him and Bobby Portis, man, I mean, if Bobby Portis can be a little bit better of a defender coming into this season, between him and Wendell Carter Jr. down low, like that would be, that to me, I think Wendell Carter Jr. can find his niche and like find some confidence and actually like get his footing into it. I think maybe the idea of throwing Wendell Carter Jr. out there as a rookie and having to let him learn on the fly might not be that advantageous, at least the way Fred Hoiberg might be thinking about this. But I totally agree, though, and I'm still going back to saying that as far as trying to develop your players and see what you have out of them, I think Wendell Carter Jr. needs to be on the floor as a starter sooner rather than later in this system. But I'm wondering, like, early on in those first few months, maybe Wendell Carter Jr. can actually eat off that second unit between him and Bobby Portis, and then you're going to have Denzel Valentine, Justin Holiday, and Cameron Payne. like, yeah, you're going to have probably two or three guys that are looking to get buckets, Holiday, Denzel Valentine, and also Bobby Portis. But I think it could open up things for Wendell Carter Jr., especially if we see him starting to knock down some threes with consistency, and you see him shot blocking and being able to switch and doing all these things that we thought he was going to do. I think he can find his footing as far as the second unit goes and maybe earn himself a promotion. But I think you're right. If things don't work out with Jabari Parker at the three early on, I don't think the Bulls are going to go away from that. I think maybe they force their hand and just continue to let him either thrive or be bad out there at the three, and that's what they're going to go with this year. But I could also see Fred Hoiberg shifting him to the four, but then you kind of, again, have a clogged front court, you know? Lauri yeah. Markkanen, Jabari Parker, Wendell Carter Jr., Robin Lopez, and then you've got Felicio, and of course, Ashik's not going to see the floor at all. Like, no. Literally never going to see the floor.
No. And so, like, and that, see, to me, this goes back to why I am just so still just salty about this Jabari signing, is because you're talking about, well, the Bulls are going to experiment with Jabari at the three, and we're not sure if it's going to work. And then if it doesn't, and Fred just says, all right, well, you know, F this. Like, we got to find a way to get Jabari minutes at the four. I'm sorry, but we clearly, not everyone is on board, because we had a texter on our Wednesday episode saying, like, I don't buy into marketing. I think we should be building around LaVine instead. And he's probably not completely alone in that opinion, but I think most of Bulls fans who paid attention last year see that Lowry is the most exciting piece we have. So you shift Jabari to the four, and you and I have talked about this too, Jordan, we're not quite convinced that Lowry can be playing real minutes at the five quite yet. Maybe at some point down the road in his career, as the NBA shifts even further and further away from big lineups to small lineups. But I don't know about this year. I don't know about Lowry playing real minutes at the five this year. And then if you have to bump Lowry out of the four for Jabari to the five, then you're bumping Lowry, then you're bumping Wendell out of the five for Lowry. And Wendell is a rookie that we want to see get a lot of minutes. And I'm with you. I think Wendell is going to get some real opportunities in that second unit to start the season coming off the bench. If and when he does win the starting job from Robin Lopez, or they trade Robin Lopez, he's going to go to being the fifth option in their starting five offensively, and that's going to suck. As far as getting the most out of these guys, that's why I have a problem with this Jabari thing. If Fred can't get it to work at the three, and he's getting eaten alive on the defensive end at the three, okay, well, Jabari plays the four now. Okay, well, Lowry plays the five now. Okay, well, then now there are no minutes for Wendell. So that's the issue.
Yeah, I think that's worst case scenario, and we'll see what happens in training camp too. Fred Hoiberg said, you know, quote unquote, this is an open job, it's anybody's job to take. So we'll see. Like, we'll see what kind of chemistry some of these guys are able to build up with each other, especially in that starting unit. I'm very curious about how him and LaVine and Parker, like, the criticism that's come down on both of those guys, I think, from Bulls fans and nationally too, I think is going to be something as part of a motivator. Like, I look at this team and ask myself, you know, a team full of guys that have been just knocked down or overseen or felt like that their value might not be as high as it once was. A lot of guys have something to prove on this team. And I think that combination can go two different ways. It can make this team a hell of a lot better than we all expect it to be next season, or it can just burn to the ground because they're not strong enough as a team. They're all out there to get it for themselves. But I think if you go into and you look at the positive direction of this, and like, we're talking about legitimately seven or eight guys that have something to prove on this team, and you could even extend it as far as all the guys in the rotation that have something to prove this year. Like, talk about Denzel Valentine. He's got something to prove this year, because considering all the moves that they made this offseason, Denzel Valentine looks like the odd man out as far as legitimate minutes go next season. You talk about guys like Bobby Portis. If you do have to shift Jabari Parker to the four, what does that do to Bobby Portis's minutes? Like, he's got something to prove as well, because he's coming up on a contract. He's in a contract year this year. You look at Chris Dunn. I've talked about this before, and I think this is going to become more prevalent this season, is Chris Dunn's up for early extension talks this year. He's already 25 years old, too. So he's got something to prove as well. And you know how Jabari Parker just said, people in the NBA, which is mildly true, don't get paid to play defense. So I think maybe Chris Dunn was going to be looking at that. And you know what? I got to get my offensive numbers up this year. And while I don't personally think he needs to do that in order to have value on this team, I think that might be in the back of his head this season. So you're talking about a lot of guys
that
have something to prove.
Absolutely. Dunn's thinking about that. All right, let's go to our next one here. This one comes to us from the 312 and to our texter, who was whining about Jimmy Butler earlier this week. Guess what? This one's for you. Can we stop talking about Jimmy Butler? He's a good player, a star player, but not a superstar player, like most Bulls fans think he is. Jimmy is our franchise player, led us to the eighth seed, couldn't win one game versus Boston when Rondo went down. With a core 24 and under... I'd rather be an 8 seed with a core 24 and under than with a 28-year-old Butler and being the 8 seed. Kind of what you and I were saying earlier this week, Jordan. I like Butler and respect his work ethic, but look where that got us. I don't think we would ever win with Jimmy because he wants to be number one option on a championship team, and he's not. He's a second or third option on a championship team. But he doesn't understand that because he's Hollywood now. I'm just sick of Bulls fans always bringing up Butler like we made a mistake by trading him. We didn't. He would be up for a Supermax contract, gets hurt often, and his age during that contract would be a negative. Thank you, Texter from the 312. That is exactly what I have been preaching to those people boo-hooing the Jimmy Butler trade since it happened. Logic. Logic is a fun thing to use, and it's also helpful. Let's use more of it, people. It doesn't mean you can't look back on Jimmy years fondly. Like, when Jimmy turned himself into a star, it was fun. Because Bulls fans needed something positive. Because he turned himself into a star while Derrick Rose's while Derrick Rose's career was going down the toilet. Jimmy saved us and kept us relevant for a few years. And that was awesome to see happen. But it's gone. It's in the past. You can remember it fondly. But people who are still upset thinking it was a mistake to trade him just don't know what they're talking about.
I think people getting pissed off at Jimmy Butler is also unfair. Like, think about the team that the front office assembled around Jimmy Butler. And after clearly saying that he likes, and like now when we're looking at it, too, like clearly saying that he liked Tom Thibodeau. I think all of this kind of points for me as far as a disdain for the front office. It goes back to Jimmy Butler. Like the fact that this guy worked his ass off from 2011, 2012 when he was a rookie all the way to get to the point that he's at, which I still consider Jimmy Butler a top 15 player. I don't care what you think about him last year with the Minnesota Timberwolves and being quote unquote either the number three or the number two option. Like for the first couple of months that season, he wasn't able to do what he wanted to do. When they went on that good run in December, January, February, when the Timberwolves looked like they were rolling, it's because Cat finally said, you know what, this isn't working. All right, now it's Jimmy's team. And Jimmy was allowed to do the things that he was supposed to do and lead the way he was supposed to lead. All right, back to the Bulls, though. This is a classic case that the Bulls didn't build a team around Butler ever that we thought was going to be a legitimate contender. And I feel bad. That's a disservice to Jimmy Butler. And the Bulls, I feel like, in the last two or three years, played this with the idea that we talked about, that they were never going to pay him the max contract, that maybe he could have gotten here if he had stayed. And I agree still. I still agree at the time that trading Jimmy Butler was the best move for this organization going forward. But I feel like Jimmy Butler got the shit end of the stick from the front office, and people got pissed off at him because he turned into Jimmy Hollywood in his final year. He had to. Like, nobody had his back. This city, as far as the fans go, had his back. The front office, the organization, did not have Jimmy Butler's back. So to shit on Jimmy Butler, I don't think is fair at all. And to say that, yeah, maybe he's not a superstar, but he's one of the top 15 players in this league. And so to go from being a guy that got drafted in the back end of the first round at 22 years old to turn himself into a star in a matter of 5 years, he's a four-time All-Star. So to shit on Jimmy Butler, to me,
he's
is
a
just
great
insane.
Player. And I'm not, you know, there's a difference between crapping on him and explaining the logic for trading him.
Agreed. Totally agree.
Those are two different things. And I'm, you know, I definitely do think that Jimmy's head got a little too big for him towards the end of his time here in Chicago. But you're also right to point out that the Bulls front office didn't do him a whole lot of favors as far as giving him legit stars to play with and a good team around him. And obviously the biggest problem was clashing with Fred, because Jimmy played a game that Fred was trying to coach not that kind of basketball. I mean, sorry if I'm going to put a little bit of disrespect on D-Wade right now. We all know how I feel about that signing and the, you know, what D-Wade, quote-unquote, gave to this Bulls team in the one season he was here. I think an aging Pau Gasol is the best talent that Jimmy ever had playing alongside him. I mean, am I wrong?
No, I don't think you're wrong at all.
Pau was an all-star that season.
And maybe you could talk about Derrick Rose before the second ACL injury, too. Even playing alongside like a healthy Derrick Rose was also something. But the fact that they never went out and tried to find a replacement
for Rose.
Yeah, of course.
I meant in like the once Derrick got hurt years.
Oh, okay, yeah. I think you're probably right. Jimmy and
before the Rose stands come at me and say, oh my God, I can't believe you think Pau is better than Derrick Rose.
But yeah, that's my point. And I think as much as we want to say that like Jimmy seemed to change in that final year here with the Bulls, and that's I still go back to thinking that's in part because of Dwayne Wade. And I like Dwayne Wade as a player. I'll never knock his game, but his time here in Chicago wasn't great at all.
Gigantic waste of money.
And if
you
want to be pissed off about Jimmy Butler turning Hollywood, like in part, this is partly the front office's fault too. You brought Dwayne Wade in one year.
They brought in his Marquette big brother D Wade, and D Wade is one of the OGs of Hollywood as hell.
Shout out to Jimmy and Dwayne Wade though. After that Atlanta game, telling Paul Zipser that he needs to earn that shot. Like, still, I go back to that. That was like one of the
Dude,
best.
Are you kidding? Shout out to Rondo for sticking up for the
True.
Young guys. I was all on Team Rondo when that went down. Still,
you know,
am.
They treated Rondo so bad here. I remember Rondo bobblehead night, and he was benched for behavior detrimental.
Jaren
to the
Grant
team.
Or Michael Carter Williams. I can't remember which one.
Never bring
that name up again
on this podcast.
Remember when those
Never
were our guards?
Never bring that guy's name up ever again. He is one of the worst acquisitions of all time from this Bulls team.
I brought him up in that column I wrote yesterday, looking at Wendell's chances for Rookie of the Year. Because guess what? Michael Carter Williams won Rookie of the Year
Talk
in 2014.
Talk about the most trash acquisition of all time.
I had forgotten that, but yep.
All right, we got to take a short break here on Locked On Bulls, but when we come back, we're taking more questions. We're taking leftover voicemails as well heading into the weekend. You can always hit us up, 331-979-1369. Text and voicemail line is there. You can hit us up on social media, too, on Twitter, at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls underscore Peck. Stay right here with us at Locked On Bulls. Be back in 60 seconds.
It is completely understandable for the dude from the score to be iffy about Chris Dunn. Chris Dunn absolutely brings us nothing. We have pieces on the roster that brings any team nothing. Justin Holiday, Denzel Valentine, Chris Dunn, they bring absolutely nothing to the team. We need them off the team. How can we do it?
All right, shout out to our caller, 217. This is actually Cole from Illinois. He's texted in before as well. Appreciate the phone call. This has been something he's been clamoring at for about a week and a half, and we've touched on it multiple times, but seems like he is not high on Chris Dunn, and obviously Justin Holiday and Denzel Valentine also being a part of that. Says they bring absolutely nothing to this team, so... Matt, do you feel like all three of these guys are getting unwarranted hate because of the draft picks and the built-up hype around Denzel Valentine and Chris Dunn? And obviously, Justin Holiday, we're all in agreement, I think, here that he needs to be moved sooner rather than later. But curious about thoughts on Chris Dunn. I know we had an extended conversation yesterday about him and even with Danny Parkins on Monday. But Denzel Valentine, Chris Dunn, where do you sit at with both of those guys?
Yeah, I mean, I just don't know why Cole here is lumping Chris Dunn in with Holiday and Valentine. Like, I think that is misinformed and short-sighted. I get if you're not a believer in Denzel, and I think there are plenty of people in Bulls Nation. Who else is on C-Red Fred's bus that Denzel is like, oh, yep, here comes like a most improved player of the year. Well, that didn't quite happen. Although, to Denzel's credit, he did have a nice bounce back season this past season. I can still understand if you don't believe in Denzel and his talents and his worth at the NBA level. I can understand if you have that opinion. And I can say the same for Justin Holiday, who did not have a great year statistically last season and does not really have a spot on this team now. He needs to go. We're in agreement there. But to say that Chris Dunn is as equally useless as Denzel and Justin, like, I'm sorry, dude. You're talking about one of the, you know, you're talking about a guy who was, I think, top three or top five in steals per game in the NBA last season. I know we can talk about all day about how offense matters more than defense, but guess what? Defense matters. And we've been talking about how this Bulls roster that they're going to trot out there next season is going to get lit up. 120 points per game lit up. Chris Dunn is going to be the one guy trying to prevent that from happening. So don't sit here and tell me that Chris Dunn is useless. Yeah, he needs to be better at finishing at the rim. Hopefully he is better this season at doing so. He needs to improve his outside range. Hopefully he's better at that this season. But he's a decent point guard who can penetrate, break defenses down off the dribble, find looks for his teammates, and he's on his way to being one of the better defensive point guards in the league. You can't sit here and tell me that that has zero value.
I think one of the other things, too, is as Bulls fans, we don't have to fix everything in one offseason or even an offseason and a half. You know what I'm talking about? We just started this rebuild. We're not even in the second year of actually getting on the court and seeing what this looks like. So you don't have to fix everything right away. And you also don't need to know what a player is or what a player isn't right away either. And I still think there's a lot of unknown about Chris Dunn still. And I agree with you. And I still am very high on Chris Dunn. I think he can be the point guard we all want him to be. And I think he can be a legitimate point guard on a team that has three or four other guys that are going to be the first scoring option. So to me, I know Chris Dunn's going to probably want to get his buckets too, because like I said before on yesterday's episode, that the NBA pays guys to score buckets. And they don't necessarily pay out the same way that they do for defense. Look at Marcus Smart and what he got paid for defense compared to what Jabari Parker got paid for offense. It's clear difference there. So I take that into account as well. The Denzel Valentine thing, I think, is recency bias. Like, can we say that, yes, the Drew League stint was not a good look for Denzel Valentine, but he also doesn't play one-on-one isolation basketball, kill you on defense or kill you on offense one-on-one. Like, that's not Denzel Valentine's game. That's never been his game. So, okay, fine. You wanna make fun of Denzel Valentine for getting cooked by a guy that works a 9-to-5? Sure, fine, great. Let me give you a stat, though, for Denzel Valentine. 37 players in the NBA had at least 4.5 three-point field goal attempts per game last season and shot at least 38% from three. One of those 37 players is Denzel Valentine. Here's the quick list of the other guys on that part of that group. Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, Devin Booker, Kyrie Irving, Kristaps Porzingis, Kemba Walker, Paul George, CJ McCollum, Chris Paul, Kevin Love, JJ Redick, Kyle Lowry, Tobias Harris, Tyreek Evans, Gary Harris, Buddy Hield, Wes Matthews, KCP, Torian Prince, Joe Ingles, Bojan Bogdanovic, Reggie Bullock, Terry Rozier, Wayne Ellington, Joe Harris, Ryan Anderson, Kyle Korver, Anthony Tolliver, and Troy Daniels. And then there was three outliers, Pat Beverly, Mirza Teletovic, and Marshawn Brooks. And then you had the lifetime G Leaguer, only played two games, and that was Andre Ingram. Shout out to Andre Ingram. But a part of that group, as far as a three-point shooter goes, that's a pretty damn good group to be a part of last season on a really shitty Bulls team. I'm not saying Denzel Valentine is going to be some superstar or anything, but people don't give him credit for being as good of a shooter and as good of a scorer than I think he actually is.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. It's fair. It's fair to come to his rescue there a little bit.
I know you're sitting there like, I don't agree with this. Got to bite my tongue a little bit.
I mean, I'll just say, point taken. I'm not enthusiastic about your take there, but point taken.
Look, I'm not sitting here and going to do the whole See Red Fred thing and defend Denzel Valentine till the day I die or anything like that. But I just feel like people shit on him without actually knowing what kind of value he is and what kind of player he actually is. I think the notion that he was a lottery pick, and I still even go back to his rookie year. Like, they didn't use him right. You've got to be able to use a guy right to get the best production out of him possible. And to stick him in the corner and be a three-point shooter is not exactly what he is, even though I just read those stats off. Last year, he was able to facilitate a lot better than I think people gave him credit for.
What do you say? Are you saying you want to see more of Denzel's weird ass floater?
No.
Is that what you
no.
want to see? Because I'm not here
no.
for that.
No. I'm just saying I think he's a better shooter and a better 3-point shooter than a lot of people give him credit for. Back to Chris.
Yeah. So turn him into a 3-point shooter. That's what the Bulls are doing. Fine.
Which pretty much it seems like Denzel Valentine is the outside outlier. Like, what could you get him in a trade? Like, he would have to be a part of a package that that you're going to get a superstar for. Like, I feel like he would be an add-on. He's not a guy that anybody's going to go out and say, yes, I want to add Denzel Valentine to my team because he's going to take us over the edge as far as our bench goes. Like, that's not going to happen. So I don't think you're getting any value for Denzel Valentine, and I still think the front office feels highly of Denzel Valentine and what he could do with that second unit. And as far as Chris Dunn, like, I don't know. I don't know what to say to you about Chris Dunn.
Yeah, I guess if you want to say Chris Dunn is useless, then you have the right to an opinion. Everyone has the right to an opinion, but I think you are wrong, sir. All right, let's go to this one. Let's have some fun. This is Jeremy from Idaho, one of our regular texters. What's going on, buddy? He says, let's have a little Bulls fun. He tosses out a lot of questions here, Jordan. Let's just kind of go down the list and hit as many as we can. Favorite three-peat. So I don't know if he means, like, do we prefer the early or the latter, or if there's a specific of the six titles from the two three-peats. But if it's pick one, I'm going to go latter. I remember it more vividly because I was a little bit older, and we all know how I feel about Dennis Rodman. What about you?
If I had to pick, and this is me not actually witnessing any of these championships, I was alive, but I don't remember any of them. I would probably say second three-peat, just because coming back from baseball and all the shit that went around Michael Jordan, and like, why did he retire and went to chase this baseball dream, and people even like clamored about his gambling problems and saying maybe that was a reason why he stepped away. Coming back and then just absolutely dominating and having one of the best seasons ever in the NBA.
I mean, yeah, 72-10. That right there is a good reason to vote for the second three-peat.
So, second three-peat is definitely... I would take the second three-peat. And I feel like most bands...
Flu game happened in the second three-peat.
True.
The shot, the final shot, not the over-Elo shot, but the shot number two, game six in Utah 98, happened in the second three-peat. Not to say that there weren't great moments in the first one, but I think you and I agree we'll take the second. Here's one. Favorite Bulls three-point specialist. I think Jordan's answer is Denzel Valentine.
Oh, man. I thought Kyle Korver got done wrong here. I'll just be completely honest.
Oh,
You look at Kyle Korver's career after he left the Bulls, and the Bulls traded him for literally a trade exception that they never fucking used.
Whoa.
Kyle Korver
Feisty. Is
my man. Yeah, like when we can get into this, somebody else texted us about the Bulls being for money over actually winning a title. That was part of the conversation, but I'll never forget that. And same thing with the Luol Deng trade and the, oh, we've got a protected Kings pick that is 8 years down the road that ends up never being an actual pick. Like that, those two deals just frustrated the hell out of me. But I think I got to go Kyle Korver is probably...
I gotta go Craig Hodges from the original 3-peat team.
Oh, dude, that's a good pick.
Dude was a beast from 3-point range and owned the 3-point contest at All-Star Weekend. Straight up owned it. Other 3-point specialist. I was gonna say Stevie. I love me some Stevie, man. Definitely a 3-point specialist on that second 3-peat team.
Yeah, I would say Steve Kerr too, I think.
But yeah,
just looking
no.
at his 3-point field goal percentage with the Bulls, like 41.9% his first year, 93-94. 52.4% from three,
boom,
which led the league in 94-95.
Also a three-point contest winner.
True.
While he was with the Bulls.
And this is back when like threes weren't being chucked up at a ridiculous rate. Like you look at the attempts per game. Jabari Parker shot more 3-point attempts per season in his first 4 years than Steve Kerr averaged his entire career. So you look at that. It's just it's a sign of the times, and it's different. But Steve Kerr shooting the three from a high clip is probably another person up there that I would agree with.
Yeah. Also, I mean, we were talking about him earlier. Don't you dare disrespect this man. You put respect on his name. Do you know the answer to who is the current franchise leader for made three-point baskets?
I have to think about it. Kirk Heinrich?
Boom, baby.
Wow.
Captain Kirk. I don't know if you would say a three-point specialist, but the most three-point makes in Bulls history with 1,049. Ben Gordon, 770, second place. Scotty at 664. Mike at 555.
Wow.
Ooh, you know who's fifth on that list behind Scotty and MJ?
Denzel Valentine?
No. Recently departed, punched in the face, Nico Mirotic, 432 makes. Actually, two above Steve Kerr. Nico Mirotic has made more three-pointers in a Bulls jersey than Steve Kerr.
So I guess we got to put him on the list, too, as far as one of our, I guess not one of our favorites, but one of the best three-point shooters that's ever been in a Bulls uniform.
Hey, guys, this is Jordan from Tampa. I just want to say I absolutely love the show. Being down in Florida, we really don't get much basketball up north, unless you're an Orlando Magic fan, and you still don't get much basketball. But anyways, guys, I have a very simple question. Fred Hoiberg's ceiling, and what's his floor? To me, his ceiling is a Steve Kerr, Greg Popovich kind of combo hybrid, a player's coach who's all about passing the ball and sharing the ball. However, his floor is what concerns me because that's what's realistic. Thanks, guys. I love the material. Keep on giving us that Bulls Nation heat that we need. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks for the call. All the way in Tampa, Florida. Shout out to the 630 again.
Sorry you don't have a basketball team down there. Bummer.
Yeah, that's
but
tough.
Hey, if your town or your city doesn't have an NBA team, odds are you're a Bulls fan because that's why Bulls fans are everywhere.
So this is a pretty solid question. I mean, we talked about this on yesterday's episode. We spent like 25, 30 minutes on Fred Hoiberg yesterday's episode. But we didn't talk about a potential ceiling or a potential floor in the way that we talk about players. Like, what's the ceiling for Fred Hoiberg? What's the floor for Fred Hoiberg? And do we even really know at this point?
I mean, when you say ceiling and floor, I don't really know in what context you're talking about. Are you talking about comparing him to other NBA coaches? Are you talking about win and loss record coming up this season? I don't really know.
I think he's talking about just in general, like comparing him to other NBA coaches and where he kind of fits and what he could be.
Okay, so floor? I think it's certainly possible that Fred's floor is he got a shot in the NBA after being successful and gaining some notoriety for turning around a program at the college level. He took that Iowa State Cyclones team and made them good and made them interesting and made them relevant. Got a shot in the NBA. Didn't work out here in Chicago. Goes back to college and never gets a shot in the NBA again. I think that's Fred's realistic floor. What about you?
Yeah, I would probably have to agree with you. I think maybe his ceiling is probably considered somewhere in the second tier of NBA coaches. Like, that would be the absolute ceiling for Fred Hoiberg. I don't think he ever turns out to be like one of the best coaches in the NBA of all time. I feel like if we had any inclination of that, we would already have seen it in the first 3 years. And I think if he was going to be considered in that top tier, if that ever was going to be his ceiling, he had to get along with guys like Jimmy Butler, and that just did not work. That did not happen. That's one of the biggest flaws about Fred Hoiberg is he wasn't able to command a locker room with a bunch of egos and a bunch of superstar talent, and I think that's a big question mark is whether or not he gets extended or not, or if he lives out his contract, is when the Bulls decide and if the Bulls decide to sign a superstar free agent or trade for one, can he command a locker room with those guys? Because the last time he did that, granted it was his first 2 years here, that can he do that? Can he learn from those mistakes that he made with Jimmy Butler? And can he find relationships that work with superstars and learning how to manage those egos? So I think his ceiling's probably tier two and his floor is probably like a guy that's a fill-in role on a rebuilding team, and maybe he gets a shot somewhere else. But I think that's your ceiling and your floor for both of for Fred Hoiberg.
Yeah, I think I'm there with you. Definitely, ceiling is as you said, second tier of NBA coaches. It's hard to see Fred turning into one of the best coaches in the NBA right now, as fair or unfair as that may be. All right, let's wrap up with one more from Jeremy because these are all really good. All right, Jordan, do you want a coach question or a trade question as far as Bulls history?
Let's stay away from the coaching. We've talked about that too much over the last 2 days. Let's go with trade.
Okay. Best non-Pippen for Polonese and non-Rodman for Purdue trade in Bulls history.
Wow.
I know my answer. What about you?
Wow.
It's a good question, right?
Damn.
I have to... Can't say Pip, can't say Rodman, best Bulls trade in franchise history. As unpopular as it was at the time, especially for a certain someone named Michael Jeffrey Jordan, I think I got to say trading Charles Oakley away and getting Bill Cartwright. Because do the Bulls win that three-peat without Cartwright? He was an aging center. He was kind of in the back end of his prime. But Cartwright was a huge part of that first three-peat team. And, you know, as good as Charles was, and as I know he and MJ were buddy-buddy, and that was a big problem between MJ and the front office for a while. Like, when they shipped out Charles Oakley, MJ was pissed. But if they keep Oakley and don't get Cartwright, do they win those three titles? I don't know. To me, I think that's the answer behind Pippen and Rodman.
All right, because I'm a relatively young Bulls fan, considering everything, I think I have to go to more of the era that I grew up in. And to be fair, I think in 2004, when the Bulls decided on draft night to trade for Ben Gordon and Luol Deng, and that number 7 pick from Phoenix, or the number 31 pick that ended up being Jack Vroman.
Not going to work here anymore.
And then a first rounder in 2005 who turned out to be Nate Robinson. So I think as far as best trades go, like, you can talk about that trade as far as Ben Gordon and Luol Deng. Yeah. They were important pieces to that, like, baby Bulls team coming up.
Yeah. Oh, huge, dude. Getting BG and Deng in the same draft class. Absolutely. That's, you know, and that's something that this current front office did. Go figure.
I know, it's crazy. It
hard to remember the good times, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's what's going to do it for me, is Ben Gordon and Luol Deng.
That's a good answer. Worst trade? We don't have time for that. Ain't nobody got time for that. Worst trade? Thanks for all the questions, Jeremy. But no, I'm sorry, we can't get into that right now. I got shit to do today.
Well, that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Once again, you can follow us on social media at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls_Peck on Twitter. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls, and subscribe to the show on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. Make sure you're following the Locked On Podcast Network on Facebook and Twitter as well. Hit our friends up at Locked On Bears and Locked On Cubs as well. Text and voicemail lines at 331-979-1369. If you want to be a part of these fantastic conversations that we're having here on Locked On Bulls, hit us up. Voicemails and text messages welcome. 331-979-1369. We're live on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app. On the Nothing But Net channel, we're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. That's tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful weekend. We'll be back on Monday with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com